This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on September 17, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
Good morning, everybody. It is good to be here. It's actually, believe it or not, it's my first trip to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. So very few familiar faces, but I think we share kindred spirits. So when we think about mastering our moments for God's glory, we all think we're multitaskers. We like to do a lot of things. We like to feel important, and we think if we're busy, we're important, and we just keep going and going and going, and that makes us feel important. Well, I'd like to ask us all, there is a difference between being busy and productive. Are we productive? So in an overview, we're going to talk about three different points here. Mastering our moments for God's glory. And probably the most important one is why. Why is it important? If we don't understand why it's important, then the rest of it we'll probably all get wrong. Why is it important that we track every minute of the day? Why is it important that we clock in on time every morning, that we show up? Why is it important that we don't waste time during our day? The next point we're going to talk about is the punctuality, our gift of respect to others. You know, when we have our parent-teachers meeting at school, it's announced, we get a notice that it starts at 6 o'clock. We show up at 6 o'clock, we sit there, we chit-chat, and then about 6:10 or 6:15 we start. So why do we start at 6 o'clock? Why don't we just say we start at 6:15? It's a habitual thing. And then there's probably some stragglers, and I'm guilty sometimes, that show up at 6:10. Let's make sure it's not us every time. And then the last one, we want to look at distractions. Distractions that hinder productivity. Things that keep us from focusing on the job at hand. Why is it important? Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. We can be as efficient and as lean and as get-go as we want to be unless we are doing it for the honor and glory of God. It is all in vain. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Drink deeply from the well of God's Word. Drink deeply from the well of God's Word. If we want to have the Lord build the house, we want to have a close communion with God. We want to drink deeply from the source. It is where we want to draw from. It is our guiding principle. It is our foundation. It allows us to ask questions like, how would Jesus handle this? And we can relate. How would Jesus handle a situation like this? And as I remember, I was sitting in a seminar one time. We have all had those moments where we'd like to just run out the door in the morning. Do we take the time to drink deeply from the well of God's Word? We've already had the time when we've read and then we think back. And we don't remember what we read because our thought was already an hour down the way. We were already thinking what we're going to do when we get to work in the morning. We've all had those moments. But still drink from the Word, drink from God's Word. Let's still do it. It won't hurt us. It won't hinder us. Drink deeply from the well of God's Word. And if nothing else, peace is probably the most important thing to master our moments for God's glory. Let's not underestimate the importance of peace with our family, the peace with God, the peace with ourselves, the peace with our church, with our community, and with our coworkers. And the reason that I feel that peace is so important is when we go to work and we are at turmoil inside, it hinders our productivity. It hinders our ability to let God speak through us. The peace of God, which passes all understanding. We want to draw from that. Through the peace of God, He will let our creative juices flow, and He will let us become a valuable asset to our business, to our family, to our community, and to our churches. Jesus evaluated the importance of peace. He said in Matthew 5:24 and 25, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift before the altar, and thou rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave thy gift before the altar, and go thy way, first be reconciled, and then come and offer thy gift." How many of us would think it's more important to be reconciled with our brother and be at peace with him than praying to God? According to Jesus, it's more important because it hinders our productivity. It hinders us. Why is it important that we master our moments for God's glory? Let's think of us. We're standing out on the hillside outside Jerusalem. Our master has led us out there. There's 11 of us. We're standing in a circle. And Jesus is giving his last teaching moments. And he looks at us. He looks at each one of us in the eye. And he said, "You shall be my witness." From Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and into the uttermost parts of the earth. Those were Jesus' last words. Not only to his disciples, but to us. Now I'd like to unearth that in today's world. "You shall be my witness in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the uttermost parts of the earth." What was Jerusalem? Jerusalem was the home base of Jesus' ministry. What was Judea? Judea was the known Christian nation at that moment. Samaria was a Gentile neighboring nation, and then he talked about the uttermost parts of the earth. If we are to be Jesus' witness as we go about our daily lives, it has to start at home. It has to start with myself. It has to start with me. If we cannot be a witness in our home to our family and to our children, we cannot be a witness to our church and to our community and to the uttermost parts of the earth. Our Jerusalem is at home in our house with our family and with our children. That is why it is so important that we master our moments for God's glory at home. It starts there. And then we lead it into the church. And if we're all doing that, we flow over out into the church. And if the churches do that, we flow out into the greater community, which is our workplace, which is where we, most of us, were thinking about today. That is where we make a big difference into, and eventually it'll go into the uttermost parts of the earth. When we think about the uttermost parts of the earth, I can think of two situations. Many of you have heard the story about Dirk Willems. In our backyard, we have Behalt, which is a painting. It's a mural of our ancestors and our forefathers. And there's a painting of Dirk Willems pulling his captor out of the water. And that story is told to every single person that walks through those doors. That is reverberating among the uttermost parts of the earth. When Dirk Willems made that decision standing on the shore, and he was standing and deciding if he wants to go out and pull his captor out of the water, that decision was not made that day. That decision gets made by single little things that we do throughout our lives every day. And at some point, we don't plan for it. At some point, we will be at that moment of indecision, and it'll be a monumental decision that we have to make. And it will be made by a lot of small decisions that lead up through there. And that is the way that it will reverberate among the uttermost parts of the earth. The other example that I can think of, and I don't know, I'm assuming there's people in here that had a personal connection to the nickel mines. That decision to walk down the road, I'm sure, was not made that day. It led up to small single things. Are we forgiving to our spouse? Are we forgiving to our neighbor? Do we extend that forgiveness? At some point, we may have to make that monumental decision, and it will reverberate among the uttermost parts of the earth, but it will not happen if we cannot do it at home. Jesus' home ministry. That is why I feel this passage is so important. It will reverberate to the uttermost parts of the earth. It's really why we're here today. It's the way that we profess Jesus Christ in our life. We have time to do what is important. We have time and money to do what is important to us. To me, I don't have a lot of time to go hunting. But there's other people in here that probably think they do. And that's okay. Because it's not important to me. Now, it did become a little more important to me because our son just turned 14 years old. He'll be 15 here in October. And he wants to go hunting. So all of a sudden, it becomes a little more important to me. But it's probably not as important as it maybe should be now. But we have time to do what is important. Let us ask, where is our time and resources going to? The magic bank account. Some of you may have heard this when we think about time management and we think about how we manage our time. So the story is, we wake up in the morning. And let's for one moment think we wake up tomorrow morning and we have a bank account. Your local bank just called you and said, there has been a bank account gifted to you and you have $86,400 in that bank account to spend today. Tonight, when you lay your head on the pillow, whatever money that's left over in that bank account is gone. It's going to be wiped out. But tomorrow morning when you wake up, there's going to be another $86,400 in that bank account again. And for every day, for the rest of your life, that's what's going to happen. So what's going through our mind? Are we thinking about boats? Are we thinking about other things that we would be doing with that? $86,400 coming in, going out, and we have to spend it. Or it'll be gone. Well, I'm here to tell you that we have that. We have that. Every morning that we wake up, we have 24 hours in a day. We have 60 minutes in an hour, and we have 60 seconds in a minute. That's 86,400 seconds in our day. Your day is not 25 hours. My day is not 23. Sometimes it may feel that way, but we all have the same amount of time. And whatever we do with that time, either we use it for God's glory or we waste it on self-gratification. When we think about the important things and the important things in our life, you know, we think about devotional time with our peace with God. We think about personal time with our spouse. We think about time as a family. Or do we take it and we use it for self-gratification? We all have 86,400 seconds in our day. It's up to us how we're going to spend it. Another quote that I like, saying yes to something is saying no to something else. If we say yes to one thing, we are saying no to something else. If I say yes to do something in the evening and I'm going to stay out late or whatever it is, it may even be a family gathering, I may say yes to getting up late in the morning and not having time to devotional time, and whatever it may be. If we say yes, we are not so special and so gifted that we can make more time. If we say yes to one thing, we are saying no to something else. Now we're going to move on. Punctuality, our gift of respect to others. What's our meeting culture like? I remember, you know, when I was thinking about this, I remember I worked at a company and we had a meeting. Our meeting was scheduled at 10 o'clock. And I knew if I'd show up at 10:02, the meeting would not have started. So I'd show up 10 o'clock, somewhere between 10:10, 10:05, and then once everybody kind of moseyed into the room, we'd get started. We've all been in those situations. Maybe you have a better culture than that. So I worked there, and that was just the way that we did things. We'd have meetings, and you know, we'd get our stuff done, but it was kind of a dragged out situation. And then I switched jobs. I went to another company, and we had a lot of satellite office locations, so we had a lot of our meetings through conference calls. And the first time that I was in a meeting, we had a meeting at 10 o'clock, and I called in at 10:01. The meeting was underway. I was late. The message was conveyed. At 10 o'clock, the meeting will start. So let's just ask all of ourselves, what kind of meeting culture have we created in our company? It's up to us. We are what we allow. We are what we allow. What kind of meeting culture do we have? Our son, he works on a construction crew. And every morning, they have about 5 guys that they pick up. And they don't always go in the same time in the morning because depending on the distance of the job. But they know, he's calculated in his head, if the other guy gets picked up at 4:30, he knows that 20 minutes later, the driver's going to be at our house. And it is like clockwork. And it is just it's a respectful thing by the driver, and it's a respectful thing for us if we're ready when he shows up. If he shows up continuously 2 minutes late or 5 minutes late, then we get into this habit of thinking, well, we don't have to be ready until a couple minutes later. And it's this habitual thing, and then all of a sudden he shows up one day on time, and then we're not ready. Whose fault is it? So it's a respectful thing to each other. Production employee and time tracking. One thing that I'd like to say here is nobody gets up in the morning and goes to work and thinks, I'm going to be lazy. I'm just not going to give my time. I don't care. Nobody does that. But we sometimes can get into a habit of being habitually slacker or things like that. Nobody goes to work and thinks that we're going to steal money from the company. I put this slide together. So I do some bookkeeping for small businesses, and I like numbers. So when we think about production and the importance of showing up on time and being there and doing the job, hopefully I made it simple enough. We all know that revenue that comes in, the sales, are what drives the business. If we don't have money coming in, we don't have a job. So we look at the funnel, the sales are coming in. And then the first 3 categories that we look at is we call the cost of goods sold. That is what it takes to create a product. It's what the product, the cost of good that it takes to create that product. So the first hopper that it falls into, we think about the money flowing down the pipe, and all the money from the sales is going through there, and the first one is materials. So we have, if we're building furniture, we have wood, we have lumber, we have drawer slides, we have hinges, whatever it takes to create that product. The second one is production labor. When we think about production labor, that's the employee's wages. Whoever is driving that screwdriver, the employee's wages, it's the employer taxes to pay that person. It's any benefits that that employee has, paid vacation, paid holiday. So that's the production labor. So as you can see, as we're going down, less and less money is flowing through. And then we have the production overhead. That's the buildings, the vehicles that are going out doing the construction jobs, the tools, the utilities, anything that we need to do to keep the lights on, the production shop. At the end, that's what it takes to create that product. That's the cost of goods sold. We have the gross profits. Now, that's not what all goes into the company coffers. There's still some other unseen expenses, what we call the SG&A, the sales general and administrative. We have salespeople that we have to pay. They're out there doing sales. They're getting in. They're bringing the revenue in. They're doing trade shows. They're doing catalogs. We're doing advertising. We have the front office wages that we need to pay. We have the office equipment. The phone bills are coming in. So those are the sales general and administrative. Then in the end, we have what we call the net profits or the net income. It's where all the money ends up. After all the other expenses are, we have the net profits, which is going to be used for charity, Maybe it's used for profit sharing. Maybe it's used for future growth or for new equipment. I want us to look at two different parts of there. Let's think about the net profits as being a safe in the front office. When all the other expenses are taken out, we put money that's left over and we put it in that safe in the front office. None of us would think about going in there and opening that safe and taking money out. Material, production labor, production overhead, all the other costs are allocated for. We can't take any money out of that. We can. There's areas where we may be able to slim down, but if we're looking at production labor and we're thinking about the efficiency and being there on time and giving it a 9-hour day or a 10-hour day, if we come in and we only give 6 hours or we only give 8 hours, we are essentially opening the safe, taking money out of that front office, and none of us would ever want to do that. So that's the importance of coming in and tracking on ours, being there on time. And the opposite of that is, if we are there and we're giving it our all and we can cut off hours, we're putting extra money into that front office safe. That's what we all want to do. We want to come in and we want to put extra money into that front safe. So we think about production time, time wasted versus time gained. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Nobody wants to be lazy. None of us wants to do that. So we're going to get into our third section here. The distractions, things that hinder our productivity. I like creating lists. Creating lists and following the plan. And I'm going to get into some things here that I like to do, and there's just apply it to different aspects of your business where you're in. Arrange time in the morning to prepare the list for the day. Bring that back to Monday morning. And use the Eisenhower matrix. If it's important to do and it's urgent to do now, it's on the top of your list. If it's important and it's urgent, do it. If it's important to do, but it doesn't have to be done today, schedule it into a future. Be sure you write it down. Be sure you write it in your planner, into your calendar. And if it's urgent, but it's not important, you can delegate it to somebody else. Is there somebody else that can do this? If it's not urgent and it's not important, don't waste your time on it. Don't waste your brain power on it. Move it out of the way. Move it out of the way. Get it moving on. So as I'm making that the list in the morning, one thing I do, I have this little notepad in my pocket. I don't wear glasses, but this is very similar to glasses to me. It's the last thing that comes out, and it's the first thing that goes in. If a thought comes to your mind, jot it down. Just make a note of it so you can remember it. Sometimes it's on my bedside stand. Something may come into your thought at night. Get up, jot it down. The sooner that you can get it out of your brain, the better off we are. Get it out of there. If we have if we're trying to remember all these things, our brain is not that special. We are not more special than other people. We will be unproductive because we're trying to multitask. We're trying to do all these different things. Write it down. So in the morning when I'm making my list, I just pull this out. I'll categorize whatever's on here so I can move on. We move on. Check your emails. Check your phone messages. We'll get into emails and phone messages later, but this is a part of the day when I like to do that. Check your emails. Check your phone messages. First thing, categorize them. Where do they need to go? This is an area where I'm bad at, but I recommend it. Do as I say, not as I do. Stop 10 or 15 minutes before it's quitting time and clean your area. Just clean up. How much funner is it to come in the morning and everything's clean, everything's organized? Just stop and ask your boss for sure if you're allowed to do that. And don't just say, he said, I'm supposed to do it. But that is something that I have learned. If you can clean off, end your day good, it always starts off better in the morning. The other thing that we like to do as a family is we like to have a weekly collaborative meeting. Sometimes we can't schedule it because of the children's schedules, work schedules. But if you can do either a Saturday morning or a Monday morning, Friday evening, have a collaborative family meeting, and I just bring out my schedule book. My wife has anything on her calendar, and we discuss the next week's happenings, the next week's events. What are some of the schedules look like? If everybody's there, we've learned it just helps us flow through the week. And that could be done at work or however that all looks. But we like to do it as a family because it brings everybody on the same page. It's a time that we can just sit down and we talk about a lot of different things. Sometimes it gets into personal things. Just schedule a weekly collective meeting. This is the planner, Pat, that I like to use. And I know a lot of you probably can't read it, but we'll go down through it as we're thinking about. It's a funnel, and the top one is the weekly list of activities by categories. So I split my time in three different entities. We have Tiny Home Living, which is a small business that we build all kinds of small specialty structures. And then I do bookkeeping for small businesses, and then we also have a farm entity. I shouldn't be doing all three if I'm trying to master my moments for God's glory. But right now in our family, that's what we have. I envision in a year or two down the road, we won't be doing all three. But I categorize them. When I'm talking about schedule it out the road, down the road, is I will have the three categories, and then I'll make a note in there of what needs to be done that week. And then Monday morning, it gets categorized into days. And it allows us to just strategically place it where it needs to be. Now, there's times when my to-do list will become longer than what can fit on here, and I have a tablet off to the side. And then the bottom, you have any appointments, any meetings that you may have. So that is something that has helped me tremendously, and it's available from plannerpads.com if it's something that you'd like to do. Unfortunately, I don't have a phone number. I have somebody that can go online and purchase it for me, but just an example of how strategic they are. In October, the week of October 6th, they have this little page in here that it's a tear out, but it says, get ahead, plan for next year, order your next year's planner pad. I don't even have to remember to do it. It's right there. And it allows us to stay focused on the job at hand, which is the next thing that I like to talk about. If we can strategically place the things that are important to do, it allows us to focus on the job at hand, a place for everything and everything in its place. This is my desk. If I come to work in the morning, if I sit at my desk and it looks like this, I'm not sure where to start. What if it looks like this? A place for everything and everything in its place. When I used to work at the furniture shop, we had workstations. We had a scissor table where our furniture went up and down, and we had a downdraft table. And then in back of that downdraft table, we had about six different routers. We had a half-inch radius. We had a flush-cut bit, and we had other routers that we needed to do. And I could, subconsciously in my mind, I could reach for the right router because I knew exactly it was going to be in its place. A place for everything and in everything in its place. Where's my stapler? Where's my scissor? Where's my phone? Where's my notepad? I know my scissor is in my right, left to me in my cup. I know my phone is right in front of me. That's my cell phone. And I know my desk phone is to the right of me. It's a jumbled. We get caught up in this busyness. A place for everything and everything in its place. Checklists. I like to use checklists. So if you have weekly or daily or monthly tasks that you do, and here's an example of a checklist in the bookkeeping side. So I do reporting for some of my companies at the end of the month, and I have this checklist. I don't have to remember to do what I need to do every month because it's detailed. I just pull that out, and I go down through it. I make sure that we have all the bank statements and all the things that need to happen through there. It's just that checklist thing. It allows us to think and focus on the job at hand, and we don't have to go through and try and remember it all the time. Here's another example. One of our daughters helps me doing the data entry, and I created this checklist for her on a weekly basis. So she just needs to pull that out. I'm not continuously watching over her shoulder to make sure that she's done every step. It's a checklist that we can do on a weekly and on tasks that we do on a weekly and monthly basis. automating tasks, things that we can do. And for those of you who don't use Excel, you can just bear with us here. But I use a lot of Excel to do reporting. Excel macros. Excel macros are simple to set up and use. Learn how to do it. It's something that we can do easily. Here's an example of a spreadsheet that I export out of QuickBooks. In less than 5 minutes later, I have these reports by using macros that are set up. If we do that manually, it would take me hours to do it. Just automate it. Use Excel macros. Embed links. This is a CRM where you have the name, the contact information of the customer, and then I keep a folder. I keep a folder system, a file system where I keep all the information for that customer. Any drawings, any notes that I had, any phone conversation that we have. And there's a link where if I'm on that CRM, I can just click on it and it immediately opens that folder. If not, I have to close the CRM that I'm in, go in, do about 3 or 4 steps until I'm in that folder. Just something to time management to help us go through it quicker. And on that note, when I'm at my desk, most of the time I'm at my desk, if I'm having a phone conversation, I have Microsoft Word open and I'm just typing whatever we're talking about. Just typing it in there. If I'm not at my desk, I'm writing it on a notepad and this is where it goes. It goes into the customer's folder. I may never pull it back up. But if I'm making a follow-up phone conversation to that customer, I'll pull it up. I'll see what we last talked about. It's just, and it'll jog. You'll be surprised at how much things you'll see on there that you forgot about. But and if I'm off site and I'm not there, I'll jot it down. It's as simple as taking a piece of paper, laying it on the scanner, scanning it in, putting it into the customer's folder. Don't try and retype it. Don't spend a lot of time retyping it. If you're doing a paper system, you can do the same thing. Have a customer file, just put your paper in there, and it'll be there. It'll jog your memory of what we talked about, and it'll help you go back. Take notes. Color coding. I like to use a lot of color coding. It just simplifies and makes it easier. This is our office wall at home, and we have the different bookkeeping clients all have a different folder. And there's different ways that you could apply this in your business. I remember we were talking to a blanket wrap furniture delivery company when I was working at the furniture company, and they talked about using different color blankets for every stop along the way. So imagine when your driver pulls up to a dock to unload furniture and he knows that all the orange blankets are getting off here. How much faster can he do it? Color coding, something to simplify it. Bring it down to a fifth grader level. We adults have a tendency to overcomplicate things. Just simplify it. So I like to use a lot of color coding. Multitasking. I touched about this earlier a little bit. We all think that we're special and we can do multitasking. Let's not fool ourselves. You may be that one special person, but many of us, we can't do a lot of good things on the same time. Distractions. The last one, emails and text messages and phone calls. Make them your servant, not your master. I think we've probably all had them be our master. So if we have, for me, I'm at my desk, and I have 2 screens. I have that tendency to have the email open all the time on the second screen. Unless you absolutely have to, don't do it. Don't have your emails open unless you are a service person that needs to respond quickly or whatever your company's policy is. But if you don't have to, close it because it is a distraction. It is a distraction. It's been a proven fact and studies have been done. If we're doing a task and we're doing a job at hand and we get distracted by a phone call, email, text message, whatever it may be, somebody walks up to your desk, after that alteration, it takes us about 5 minutes to get back into it again. 5 minutes. So if we're here and that new email pops up, our eyes are automatically going to glance to it, and we know that it's going to be 5 minutes until we're really back into the groove again. So just close it. Text messaging. I actually don't do text message with my phone, but I know how it is. If you're talking to somebody and they get this ding, you're like, "Hello, am I still here?" The person is, it's immediately, it's like it's drifted off. Phone calls. Actually, I'm not going through my slides here. I think I have a couple. Emails. Check them periodically. Don't let them distract you. text messages, phone calls, and use voicemail gracefully. So this is something that I learned from a guy that I worked. And I know not everybody can do this, but if I do not have to, I rarely answer phone calls. I'll use the example. So if I'm working in the shop and I'm doing something on the tiny home side of it, I will always, my phone will pretty much always go to voicemail. But the reason I like to say use voicemail gracefully, this is what I do. In the morning, if I know that I'm going to be working in the shop that day, because you know if you're working in the shop and you're trying to do production and you get phone calls on a regular basis, it's going to be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half hour, and all of a sudden you've only worked 4 hours in an 8 hour day. So here's what I do. I change my voicemail every morning. And I'll say, this is Wednesday, September 17th. I will be working in the shop. Please leave a message and I'll call you back at the noon hour or between 4 and 5 this afternoon. You have clearly conveyed a message to whoever is calling you that it is okay to leave a message, and you've given them an expectation when you will call them back. And then we have to do it. In my business, that works okay because they know that they can receive a call back. It allows me to be productive. If I'm working in the office and I'm doing bookkeeping, it'll say something like this. This is Wednesday, September 17th. I'm in the office, so please leave a message and I'll call you back as soon as possible. It's a little more open-ended, but also they will know that I'm calling back that day. I'll be calling back, and usually a lot of the clients that I work with are people that I work with on a regular basis, so they know they can expect a call back in the next hour or so if that message is there. So that's why I say use voicemail gracefully. I know it will not apply to everybody's situation, but if it can apply to your, it can limit our distractions and it can allow us to focus on the job at hand. And then when I do that, my phone is on silent. It does not ring. Because if it rings, it's going to have that 5 minute distraction again, just like an email blurping in. You know, we like the phone to ring because it makes us feel important. Somebody wants us. But let's focus on the job at hand. So the distractions, just a quick overview. Create the list, the joy of checking it off. Focus on the job at hand. Emails, text messages, phone calls, make them your servant, not your master. So the last slide, avoiding burnout. If we are passionate about our job and we enjoy what we do, every one of us will experience burnout at one point or the other. We will. So what can we do to avoid burnout? Plan for the unplanned. Recently, so this summer, we started doing a farmer's market, and we knew our schedules were going to be tight. I mean, we're juggling these different things, but we had it kind of scheduled, and everything was working along fine until about, I think it was about the week of 4th of July, and our son overheated, and he came down with pneumonia. So he was sick for about 3 weeks, and then one of our daughters got it. She was down for 2 weeks. And then the last two got it at the same time, and we knew it was going to be another 2 weeks. And the oldest one actually ended up in the hospital for about a week. We were all burned out because we did not plan for the unplanned. We knew our schedules were, they're pretty good. We got them all lined up, and then the unplanned happened. So let's plan. Let's give us some space. Let's give us some time. The second one is don't promise too much. I had a gentleman that he was coaching us in a period of my life, and he gave us this story. He said, we can't be Superman. And he said he was coaching a young man, and he was trying to get him to, we can't be everything to everybody. I've never seen Superman in action, but I've seen pictures, and you can kind of visual that. He's above us all. He's doing something. He's better than us all. And something in our mind wants to kind of tell us that we're a little bit better than the other people. We think that we can do it better, and we're promising all these different things. But the story that he gave us, he said he was talking to this young man, and he was trying to get him to see that you can't be everything to everybody. And then he used this term, and he said, you can't be Superman. And this young man starts unbuttoning his shirt. And he's like, what's going on here? And he opens his shirt, and here he's got a Superman t-shirt on. And he said, I wake up in the morning, every morning, I put this t-shirt on to remind me that I'm Superman. And you know, we may not don the Superman shirt, but sometimes we have that tendency in our mind that we're going to prove the world that we're better than other people. But let's face reality. We're human. We're prone to mistakes. Let's not be everything to everybody. We overestimate what we can do in a day, but we underestimate what we can do in a year. So create ourselves goals, checklists, things that we can do as we go on. We overestimate what we can do in a day, but we underestimate what we can do in a year. So in summary, why? Three different bullet points I'd like to bring to the point here. Take care of the important things in life. If we don't know our why, if we don't take care of drinking deeply from the Spirit of God's Word, if we don't take care of our spouse, take care of the important things in life first. And then the rest of the things will fall in place. Punctuality. Show up on time. Just show up on time and give it your best. Distractions. Be focused on the job at hand. Let's be focused on the job at hand. Be intentional. Be realistic. Don't promise more than what we can do. May God bless you as you go home and apply.